This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Well, the road looked really good on the map, but the reality was it was an old cobblestone road with a big, large-sized cobblestones.
So I came back from that trip, and my life just started to change dramatically.
And it looked like the peasants had revolted because there were a lot of missing cobblestones.
We fought in our own streets. We were beat off our own streets. I rioted every day of my life.
Life is full of wounds. And it's something of a luxury on occasion to be able to choose one's wounds instead of just have them done to you.
So we have to slow down and change our rhythm and, you know, learn to be okay and to breathe with it.
And on this little motorcycle, I was bouncing so much, my poor kidneys were so bad. I ended up getting to Paris with the worst case of hemorrhoids I'd ever suffered in my life.
Hello, welcome. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller.
From our studio in Sebastopol, California. And this is a show about journeys. Not always the most inspirational journeys. Sometimes, but not always.
Sometimes the journeys we take that we're not even aware of.
Oh, yes. At this moment, we are spinning at more than 1,000 miles an hour while flying around the sun at 67,000 miles an hour. And then we've got people with their cell phones talking a mile a minute while driving faster than you really want to know. So hang on.
And I kind of wish we'd get around a little faster to the warm side of the sun. It's really chilly here in this so-called Mediterranean climate.
Well, our garden is kind of frozen in its tracks. I had this strange image that this might be part of a secret government program to counteract global warming by launching colossal air conditioners into orbit, turned high when they're over California.
Today, two voices.
So we've been on the air over a year with a program called Hitchhiking Off the Map, and we have never actually talked about hitchhiking. And of course, it's a metaphor, and life is a journey, all that stuff, and we can do funny fundraising pitches like, lend me your thumb. But at some point, we had to confront the fact that hitchhiking, literal hitchhiking, is something that human beings do. So we got a note saying, hi, I've got some hitchhiking stories. Want to talk? Sure.
Okay, my name is David Dresser. I live in Berkeley, California. I'm originally from Maryland. I'm 66 years old now. I was born in 1936. My parents divorced, and I lived on a farm with adoptive parents. But I moved to California to live with my mom in 1953, and we lived in Santa Rosa. I finished high school there, and then migrated to Los Angeles. While I was in Los Angeles, I received a notice that Uncle Sam wanted me. I just recently lost my job. Times were kind of hard. I just lost a girlfriend. I'm sleeping on my mother's couch. And my unemployment insurance was about to run out. So I enlisted in the Air Force. And then I went to the only foreign country the Air Force sent me to, which was Mississippi. I took my leave into Maryland to see my father, which turned out to be the last time I ever got to see him. And when my visit was through, it was time to get back to the base and continue with my schooling, I hitchhiked. So it wasn't too bad. My brother took me to some highway, and I hitchhiked down through Virginia, and I got a ride and another ride. And then I got a terrifying ride. A couple picked me up, and they were partying. And they were partying very strongly. They were drinking a lot, and it turned out they were married, but not to each other. They offered me a drink, and I accepted instantly because I was terrified with the driving. The driver was creating a third lane on a two-lane road because he decided that he could catch up with someone he knew that was ahead of us, and he wanted to transfer me to them to get a longer ride. And he did, fortunately, catch up with them. And they regaled me with tales of how this guy couldn't get insurance because of his bad driving record. I thought, boy, I'm sure glad I got through that. These people were very nice, bought me a lunch, and then they dropped me off in Nashville on the western side of town so I could hitchhike across Tennessee to visit with my kid sister. But as I went across Tennessee, I was picked up by a black man in those funny segregationist times. His license plate was from Minnesota. We drove for hours and hours and hours talking about various things, and he was married to a woman from Louisiana. And every year he'd bring his wife down to visit with her family, but he could only stay for about one day and had to get out of there because he knew he would get himself into trouble. He couldn't stand the kowtowing and the behavior that was required. I got to where my sister lived in western Tennessee, in country someplace, and had a nice visit with her and hitchhiked on down through Mississippi. And I was wearing a uniform, in my Air Force uniform, which was really good for getting rides, but it made me a stranger and a foreign person. I experienced xenophobia like I had never experienced such a thing. And I understood the feeling of the hate look that Black people frequently refer to. Not because of the military, but because, specifically because I was an alien, a foreign person in that region. And I thought, oh, I don't like this part of the country. But I completed my training, and it was in about November. And home is Hollywood. That's where my mom lives. So I shipped my stuff by Greyhound and said, to heck with that, I'll just hitchhike. It was the most wonderful trip I've ever had. Here it is, winter, and it's really pretty cold, but not freezing. Again, I was wearing my uniform, but with a sweatshirt on underneath. So I was comfortable, and I got a ride instantly, within 5 minutes. Right away, I saw an armadillo, the only one I've ever seen in the wild, ran across the road, and I took it to be a good omen. And perhaps it was, because I got rides and rides and rides, one after another, without a problem. Austin, Texas was very beautiful. Went through that. Got out in places where there was just nothing but shrub in the plains country of Texas. Night came on one night, and a young man from Australia picked me up in a Karmann Ghia that he had borrowed from a friend in New York City. And it turns out he was a sheep farmer in Australia, and he was visiting sheep farmers in New Mexico and Arizona to compare techniques. So we rode in this Karmann Ghia into the blackest night. It was dark. You couldn't see the landscape at all, but there was this sensation of slowly going downhill as we approached El Paso. And he turned to me and he says, have you heard Marty Robbins' new song, El Paso? And I says, no, I haven't heard it. And just then the radio announcer said, and now, Marty Robbins sings for us, El Paso. And the music from Twilight Zone came on. So we rented a motel together in El Paso. And the very next day, he went into Mexico and places. But I continued hitchhiking around the hills of the Badlands of New Mexico, as it says in Marty Robbins' song, and out into that incredible area where the buttes rise straight out of the desert. I was riding in a car totally incapable of communicating with whoever gave me a ride because I was just awe-stricken with the beauty of the country. The sensation that I had was elevation. I felt taller by the moment because I was finally getting into the real West. I was getting into the mountains. The air was different. I had not liked Mississippi because I couldn't tell direction. And the reason you couldn't tell direction was because it was pine trees all around in a flat landscape. And if you couldn't see the sun, you just had no idea where anything was. But once I got into a place where there were mountains, I was reoriented again and elevated. And I felt like I was on a high of some kind. So I got left in the middle of the night somewhere in the mountains of Arizona, but I waited, I think, 45 minutes before I got a ride, and that was the longest wait for the whole trip. So I got a ride from a kid, took me across the desert. We went through a sandstorm. His poor windshield was pitted, but he seemed to accept that because I guess he told me he'd changed his windshield about three times a year because he'd worked in Arizona and had a girlfriend in Los Angeles. He took me right to my mom's house. So that was that particular hitchhiking adventure.
And that was 43 years ago. Dave finished his time in the Air Force, got married, became active in civil rights work, moved to Europe, traveled a lot, separated, came back, and hitchhiked west.
But this time, I'm not hitchhiking in uniform. Or if in uniform, it's an entirely different one. It's more a hippie's uniform. Ponytail, beard, nondescript clothing, backpack, carrying a little portable typewriter. So I didn't get rides so quickly. And I would have funny experiences like being out in the middle of Pennsylvania someplace and some salesperson came up and gave me a little fold-open plastic device that he had as gifts for people that would protect my head from the rain. The salesman also recommended I shave my beard. He says, you'll get more rides if you shave your beard. And about a half an hour later, a young couple picked me up, and the guy had a beard. And he said he picked me up because I had a beard. So I thought, well, strike one for the good guys. Got occasional rides from truckers. One was obviously going on these back roads to evade weighing stations and things like that. Finally, I get out to Kansas, and Kansas wasn't offering rides. I was someplace out in Flatland, Kansas, and it was beautiful because there were storms coming and the clouds were changing colors. Lightning was different colors as in the distance because of the different diffractions and so forth. And it was so beautiful. I'm standing watching, and suddenly I realized that all of that stuff is coming right at me and I'm about to drown. I ended up going into a little cafe and sitting there and having a coffee and talking to truckers about getting a ride, and they wouldn't even talk to me. I was an offense as a being. So rain went on by, and I went out and got a ride from a trucker who said he used to hitchhike, and he said he felt sorry for me because he couldn't believe I'd ever get a ride from middle of Kansas there. But he gave me a ride all the way over almost to Colorado and let me out where he had to stop. So I go over and buy a candy bar from a candy machine and a Coke, and here comes a policeman. What am I doing? You know, I'm eating my candy bar. But just as he's about to ask me some questions, somebody yells, "Hey, want a ride?" And it was this man who said, "I hate cops. They have bad attitudes." So I got a ride into Boulder. And in Boulder, I was trying to hitchhike out of there. Loved it. It was beautiful, but there's a law in Colorado, no hitchhiking. So a policeman stopped me, and he says, "Look, can't hitchhike in this state." And I says, "Oh, man. You know, I've been all the way from New York, and you're going to tell me I can't go this last little ways?" He says, "I'm sorry, but if I see you out here again, I'll have to take you in." So I got a bus to the airport and called my mom and got a free airplane ride to Los Angeles, where she lived at that time.
And he talked about his early growing up in foster homes, which we'll save for another time, and other travels, hopping trains, motorcycling, getting married, raising a family, and the changes.
Probably it's more of a change in perception than reality. Most people are pretty good, but I think our society is so full of mistrust, it's really hard for people to stop and trust strangers. So I think actual hitchhiking is a thing pretty much of the past. I became an employed person. I had a car. I didn't hitchhike anymore. I still picked up people, but at some point as I got married and then later had children, it was inappropriate to invite a stranger into your Volkswagen bus with three kids in the back seat. So it wasn't that I made an intentional commitment not to pick up hitchhikers anymore, but that it wasn't the thing to do. So I just didn't do that anymore. I ended up going to work for the big capital company, the Pacific Bell Telephone Company, thinking that it was a temporary job. And 31 years later, it still felt like a temporary job when I retired. Work takes you by the throat a lot. They don't necessarily mean to take your life away from you, but you become involved. The last two or three years, I worked endless hours, but it was my choice. And I loved what I was doing, but I burned out, and I was really extremely delighted to be done with that. I'm reconstructing my house completely at this point. It's a pretty large house, and I'm just rebuilding the whole thing. And I have a big garden. So in a lot of ways, my house is right where I want to be, but it's a big house with just me and my cat. So I want to be done with that and cash it in, as it were, and move on. I'd like to live where I could have even a bigger garden and a really big workshop, and I might not even want to travel very much after that. Or it would be a very deliberate thing where I would just go for 3 months or something and have this place to come back to.
We said goodbye to Dave, and as we were editing this interview, we got a CD in the mail, a Hitchhiker's Audio Tour of the United States. Well, that's interesting, this being about 30 years after Dave's experiences. Mike Benham is young. He quit a computer job to go on the road. So we put together a short collage from his CD to compare and contrast and bring hitchhiking into the next generation. Here's Mike Benham.
You roared into the driveway of our Southwestern ranch-style house on a new...
We caught a number of short rides out of L.A., including a ride with a crazy repo man who'd lost his arm on the job. He showed us all kinds of equipment for stealing unpaid cars. A nice guy from Argentina took us a ways and played us some music from his hometown. Eventually, we caught a ride with a sad old guy who knows that the world can be a lonely place. Paradox's antics got us picked up by the cops 3 times before we finally made it to Santa Cruz. The last time was the most ridiculous. We got dropped off in front of the Hearst Castle on Highway 1. It was raining and starting to get late, so nobody was stopping. After about an hour, it became clear that we would have to walk to the next town. Of course, Paradox isn't traveling with a sleeping bag, much less a coat, long-sleeved shirt, socks, or shoes. So I gave her my raincoat, warm socks, and was carrying her bag. Still, she decided that she wasn't capable of walking. Instead, she laid down in the middle of the highway as if to pretend that she was hurt. Cars were zooming by and skidding around her while I was trying to convince her that she was going to get run over. One car actually stopped, but then she jumped up and started running towards them, and the car peeled away. Sure enough, someone called the cops.
I hopped on back of the bike, wrapped my arms around you. I sank my face into your hair.
The first night I was in Chapel Hill, I met Christina, who manages the local independent bookstore. She lives in Durham, but she arranged for me to stay at her friend Phil's house in Chapel Hill. We drank to the cold weather in a friend's bar, then played some pool in a place called Hell. Phil's house was a place for homemade soaps, a living room with a giant granite rock coming through the floor, and a morning of warm bagels over a live accordion. I left for a morning of snow, sleet, and more snow. The haiku for that day was, icy roads, cold heart pumped slush through my veins, snowstorm in my shoes. After our short jarring sleep and 5 a.m. wake-up call, the collectively reactionary objective was to get the hell out of Chapel Hill and end up someplace warm. The whole town had shut down, though, so there was no real way to hitchhike out of there. We spent all morning worrying about where we were going to stay and what we were going to do. Eventually, we decided to forget about it and go sledding. We managed to climb into a cardboard dumpster and get some big cardboard pieces, then started walking through the UNC campus towards a big hill. Along with the way, we tried to convince people to take us to Florida. As we were walking across campus, a guy named Terrence started talking to us.
We set off for Rocky Mount, North Carolina,
where we hoped to catch a Florida-bound train. Sarah and I had the best string of rides I've ever known. We never spent more than 2 minutes with our thumbs out, and we made it all the way to Rocky Mount in 4 rides. The last ride we caught was the most absurd. We were standing out on 64 in a bad spot, trying to catch traffic 2 lanes over. In no time at all, we heard a distant whistling and turned to see that some guy had seen us from a mile away and stopped a mile down the road. Where are y'all headed? Rocky Mount. Hell, that's where I'm going. Hop in. This guy sold meat door to door to support his quarter ounce a day pot habit. The only thing I'm afraid of is law. The law?
It's the warm desert,
yeah,
air.
Law.
And you pointed your headlamp toward the horizon. We were the one thing in the galaxy God didn't have his eyes on. 900 cc's of raw whining power, no outstanding warrants for my arrest. Hi diddle dee dee, goddamn, the pirate's life for me.
We headed over to the train yard. It was 10 degrees and my feet were so cold that I couldn't tell where the earth ended and I began. We clung to the cold ground of the rail embankment, hiding from yard bulls and waiting for a train that might never come. We were hiding in the woods between some drug dealers and the rails. Eventually, the drug dealers noticed us and were none too pleased with our presence. You guys can't be here. You'll get shot. Who's gonna shoot us? Do I look like I'm kidding?
Right.
We walked a few miles up the road to a gas station, then hitched a ride up to Jonesville, South Carolina. We heard the brakes air out. We were running. Our feet crunched along the gravel as we sprinted down the line. Tanker, grainer, tanker, tanker, boxcar, sealed. Tanker, grainer, boxcar, sealed, crap, 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 no rideable cars, boxcar, sealed, boxcar, open. We threw our stuff in, him and the railroad saw us. They stopped the train outside a lumber mill to search us, and it was too late to jump off by the time we figured out what was happening. Finally, we heard someone climbing the ladder, and a true South Carolina cop poked his head up over the side. He smiled with a cigar in his mouth. Well, well, well. Y'all best come down and talk to me. We threw down all our stuff and climbed out. He had us line up against his car while he searched our pockets and questioned us. When he'd confiscated all our weapons, he had us throw our stuff in the back of another cop's pickup so we can pile into his car on the way to the station. At the station, they questioned us for hours. The arresting officer kept threatening us with a 10-year jail sentence and a $10,000 fine, mandatory minimum. Yep, I've got to decide what to do. Federal trespassing is a 10 and 10 minimum. Yep, what shall we do? Basically, they really liked us and got a kick out of talking to us. Eventually, they drove us to the county line and set us loose. Now you guys go that way, you hear? Do not come back into Chester County.
Hardee's was the Hardee's of good fortune.
While we were sitting there, some old folks walked over and asked if we had enough money to eat. They bought us breakfast and then gave us another $20. As we were eating, another guy asked us where we were headed. When we told him Atlanta, he said, "Hell, that's only a 3-hour drive. I'll take y'all." So we hopped in his Mustang and set off. This guy had been run over by a car in the Marines and had suffered some head trauma. He was in a coma for 19 days and had lost a lot of impulse control. So he was a little strange. We raced other cars on the highway at 130 miles an hour. Whenever Matt fell asleep, this guy would swerve across three lanes of traffic, hit the brakes, and hold down his horn. "Hail, did you see that deer? That was a 10-pointer. Damn, just running across the highway like that." Matt was always amazed. "Oh, man, I missed it. I was asleep. I don't know." Sure enough, this guy dropped us off in Atlanta, turned around, and drove back. But it looked like it was going to rain, so we tried our much-talked-about hotel scam. I went into the office of a Days Inn alone and asked about the rates, etc., then asked to see the room. The guy gave me a key, so I walked outside and Sarah snuck up behind me. I opened the room, she went in and hid, and then I went back to the office. I inquired about the rates of other nearby hotels, then said I'd go look at the Super 8. I went outside and hid down the road for a while to make sure the attendant wasn't going to check the room. After about 10 minutes, I snuck back over and Sarah opened the door for me. We woke up refreshed, went over to the Hardee's for some egg biscuits, and caught a ride to Valdosta with the fireman. After Matt and Renee showed up, our first night in town was absolutely crazed, drunken debauchery at the Trouble House. Flaming Dr. Peppers and everyone jumping on the couches like maniacs while screaming along to punk rock as people slide down the staircase in drunken heaps on couch pillows or even a whole mattress, ducking people setting off fireworks inside the house and everybody all the while making out with everybody, because that's how strong friendship can be. Mad fire dancing and drumming in the street under stars that blur and leave trails, and then everyone is piling into Jerry's pickup so the 12 of us are hanging out and carrying on, surfing on the roof of the cab as we drive to the Ark for another great show. I would stagger out into the warm morning and say hello to the sun, nap under big branches of sadness, and swing slowly on the tire swing. We started squatting in an unoccupied house on 3rd Avenue, next to the Auto House and across the street from the Trouble House. We got carpet scraps out of the carpet dumpster and patched them together into a wall-to-wall carpet. We would talk and carry on at night until the last candle burned out. We'd eat granola, sleep on the floor, and wake up to sunny days. It seemed that everywhere I went, it was almost too cold to survive, and somehow I found that I'd been gone for 3 months. I missed San Francisco and the community that I climbed out of so long ago. The fog was still waiting for me.
900 cc's of raw whining power. No outstanding warrants for my arrest. Hi diddle dee dee. God damn, the pirate's life for me.
In Sebastopol, we were talking with David Dresser. And then in San Francisco, Mike Benham was talking to himself. You can find more of Mike's stories and his CD on his website, www.thoughtcrime.org.
And we'd like to hear more stories about hitchhiking and your thoughts about how attitudes and practices have changed and why. Email us at info@independenteye.org.
Neither of us have been hitchhikers, except a couple of times when our van ran out of gas in the middle of nowhere. But this whole issue of our relationship with strangers, fear and trust, can we really trust a motel or a diner that's not a franchise or a highway that's not a four-lane?
Can we even imagine a culture where hitchhiking was the natural way to travel? Where everybody did it, old people, Kids, people in business suits. If we really looked forward to putting ourselves into the care of strangers, where it was just more fun to talk to somebody else than turn on an audiobook and making the journey together. This does happen in other cultures. It has happened. Is it odd that living in the richest country in the history of the earth, that our way of life, which we spend billions and billions of dollars to preserve, doesn't go there?
And so, nevertheless, this is Hitchhiking Off the Map, produced by the Independent Eye with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Hitchhikers Guild, which you can join by visiting our website, www.independenteye.org. To continue on the air, we depend on the contributions of strangers and friends and strange friends.
You can also order CDs of any show, and the CDs in the Hitchhiker's Audio Library, Nativity, The Descent of Inanna, Family Snapshots, Life Journeys, and others.
Their greatest gifts for unusual friends or for yourself in your more unusual moments. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. Peace and joy.
In the 50s and 60s, it was relatively safe to do. You would hear about things happening sometimes, but I never worried about it. When I moved to Berkeley, 1970 or so, at the bottom of University Avenue near the freeway, there were always kids with cardboard signs trying to hitch a ride to someplace else. Some kid would be a smart aleck and hold up a sign wanting to go to Nepal or or Chicago or maybe just Palo Alto, but you never see anybody hitchhiking there anymore. It's not the law, it's just the fear factor. Everything has changed. And as I drive, I used to pick up people, but I don't pick up hitchhikers.